Welcome to the People and Performance Podcast, offering tips and expert insights into the strategic capabilities, behaviors, and results needed to grow and sustain employee performance.
In the first episode of Season 4, Bill and Chris talk with Dr. Benjamin Slade, Branch Head, Langley Workforce Planning, Development, and Analytics Office at NASA. Ben holds an MS degree in applied psychology and a PhD in industrial organizational psychology from Clemson University, with a focus on applied judgment and decision-making. His responsibilities at NASA have included business performance measurement, strategic workforce planning, data-driven program analysis, and predictive forecasting, including attrition modeling. Ben started as an intern at Goddard Space Flight Center and has been working as part of NASA's core HR function since 2013 in various workforce planning and HR research roles. In 2021, Ben transitioned to an HR supervisory role at Langley Research Center. He manages the research center's training, workforce planning, data analytics, organizational development, and student program functions. We hope you enjoy this conversation. Stay tuned for an action-packed fourth season, and remember to check out more People and Performance podcast content at pp-pod.com.
Ben, welcome to the People and Performance podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm geeking out at the prospect of having this conversation with you. It's been several years since you and I chatted before on the HR Chat podcast, all the way back in 2018, actually. And during that conversation, you introduced yourself by saying, if I were to distill my job description into a single sentence, it would be helping NASA make better decisions, particularly about workforce and people strategy. So let's start there. Talk about the challenges of doing this at NASA.
Sure, Bill. Yeah, there are a number of challenges to doing this at NASA, really any organization that's looking many years into the future. Certainly, there's the complexity of the work. We have projects that stretch out across multiple years, across multiple decades, all the way from when they're a glimmer in a research scientist's eye proposing work up through development and producing some scientific instrument, perhaps, that then is then flown up into space or is flown here on some other craft and then is in that operations and data collection stage. It can span years or decades. And so the right person for the project early on may not be the right person later on. We're certainly stepping into this space of private-public partnerships. And so there's complexity around, does it make sense to do the work internally? Does it make sense to purchase a service? Does it make sense to partner with an organization? A lot of complexity around contractor versus civil servant versus make and buy and those sorts of things. There's budget uncertainty. You know, we thankfully have a budget for 2022. It was passed earlier this week, but it can be challenging to deal with budget uncertainty if you're passing things one year at a time. There's certainly some additional challenges as Congress has different priorities from year to year. We've looked to expand the hiring authorities we have. We're able to take more strategies now to bring people into the federal government. And we've been standing that up to address workforce needs, but it certainly can be a challenge. We are gaining more capability to hire the talent we need to succeed, and I'm confident that we're headed in the right direction.
So Ben, you've spoken before about your pride in your team and your love for what NASA stands for and your faith in what the agency strives to achieve. What does it mean for collaboration and productivity levels when employees are super engaged and aligned with the mission?
So I believe that everyone wants to be part of an organization that does meaningful work. People want to contribute to something that they believe in. And I think NASA certainly is a place for me. It's very meaningful what we're trying to accomplish. We're trying to advance scientific and engineering knowledge for the benefit of humankind. So in an environment like that, where people are bought into what we're trying to accomplish rather than being solely focused on dollar signs or competition, et cetera, people don't tend to deliver minimally successful products. They want to achieve, they want to deliver value, and they want to work together to accomplish, like I said, big audacious goals. So that being said, an organization that also cares about its people should know enough to set up smart guardrails to reduce burnout. You don't want to be in a situation where your best people are just getting used up because they believe in the mission, that they ignore work-life balance, that they're unable to take care of other things. At NASA, we've certainly prioritized the future of work, and we understand that in the future, we are going to be, it's not really about where you're working from, it's about what you're trying to accomplish. And if you can deliver successfully, it doesn't really matter whether you're working from home, whether you're working on site, whether you're working from a different site. So it's important for NASA, and I think for every large organization, to have a strategy in place to be able to bring the right talent in to invest in the mission.
Excellent. You've talked at such events as the People Analytics Canada Summit in Toronto, but why you suggest investment in people analytics tech doesn't have to break the bank to achieve the results a company needs. Why do you believe this?
I really think we're in a golden era in terms of cheap or free software that's available for data visualization, in particular data analytics. You know, the R and Python revolutions have arrived and really provides an unprecedented ability to deliver and produce meaningful analysis with open source tools. I'd also say Microsoft Office Suite tools, similar, can do more than many people expect. Most folks only scratch the surface with general business productivity tools. And at NASA, we certainly do use some software solutions that for people analytics, surveys, data visualization, and so on. And we have partners that have developed software that that we purchase to deliver things. I think the key really is to understanding what questions your customers are asking and developing insights that help them to improve their decision quality. So bottom line, there are some wonderful things that you can go out and buy off the shelf, but don't let your lack of a budget be an excuse for why you're not able to deliver valuable analytics to your customers.
I think that's brilliant. Thank you for bringing that to light to everybody and letting them know that some of the big boy players in the world can do stuff that's really simple and off the shelf. I also think that leading with the concept of what are you looking for really should drive some of the tools that you use versus having the tools. So I strongly support that and think the same way. So that's cool. So let's change up topics a little bit.
Sure.
What are your four suggested areas where you can seek out collaborators with the needed knowledge, skills, and capability? For instance,
sure. In terms of HR analytics.
Yep.
So, and I would say first and foremost, partner up with other practitioners in HR. So I currently work at one of the research centers. But I have partners at other research centers that are interested in similar questions. We've got a central people analytics function that is, has some people that are, work in that area full time, but a larger, loose coalition of folks that are interested in providing data-driven insights and solutions for customers on different HR needs. That would not be possible for us to work in that space without a good partnership with our Office of Chief Information Officer. We are moving more towards enterprise solutions, aligning our needs with analytic needs from other groups. And really our CIO is critical in ensuring that we have access to the data and capabilities that we need with the appropriate security and appropriate validation of those sources. Likewise, we do a lot of our HR-related considerations have a budget component, and so we ensure that we're tied closely to the hip with partners on the CFO side. And then finally for us, our business strategy offices or our mission strategy offices, the folks that are driving what our strategic needs are now and 5 years, 10 years in the future in terms of future missions, what's coming up on our launch manifest, what's coming up in terms of our decadal surveys from our scientists that really set the goals for what we're going to try to go out and accomplish in the next 10 or 20 years. Understanding what they see as the future of space exploration, future of aeronautics, and specifically NASA's role in that is a key consideration as well. And so I think there's a lot of opportunities to partner there as well.
Ben, so far we've spoken largely in the context of what's happening at NASA, which makes sense because you work at NASA. But I'd like to pick your brains in terms of what you're seeing more generally out there in the world of work. You are, of course, as we've spoken about so far, a big proponent of partnering to access more data points. But in the wider world of work, Ben, how is the job, the task of attracting and engaging skills that are not perhaps available in-house changed as a result of factors such as the Great Resignation and the rise of the gig economy?
We have certainly worked to stay competitive and attract skills that we need to perform. Fortunately, we have a relatively strong employer brand. We are an employer of choice for many folks in the scientific and engineering area. So we tend to receive a lot of applications for opportunities. That's persisted even with some larger macro kind of changes to the way that people are working over the last couple of years. Internally, we've always had low attrition, but certainly over the past year, we have had numerous people within our organization either choose to step away from their NASA career to retire or to pursue a new opportunity. I would really say that that knowledge management is key, whether that's hands-on technical work, actually touching the space hardware that's going to be going up, whether that's engineering, safety, science, on our mission support side, others. It's critical to be planning to ensure that if we do have departure, if we do have elevated attrition rate in particular areas, that we're able to backfill quickly, that we're able to ensure that we have the key knowledge transferred before an individual leaves, that we've got a knowledge management practice to help take care of that, not just for our current needs, but also for our future needs.
Thanks, Ben. The next question is a question that we ask of all of our guests. And your answer, maybe it could be a one-word answer, or maybe it might be a lot longer. And it is as follows. From a culture and people processes perspective, what does a high-performing company mean to you?
So from my perspective, I would say a high-performing company is a company, an organization, where employees hold themselves to a high standard that can tackle challenges without obvious solutions and deliver results in challenging times. It's a culture where people are really proud of their work. It's an inclusive environment where diverse ideas are welcome, where employees have access to the tools and training that they need to be successful and have meaningful career paths that they can explore and grow within that organization. And appropriate recognition and appreciation for exceptional work. People spend a lot of their waking hours working for their company, and it should be something that they can be proud of, and the company should also make sure that they're taking care of them. I think I hit most of the points. I think that is a great question. I'm glad that you asked that.
Well, you gave a great answer. You know, that's usually our last question, and then we kind of do a wrap-up. But because we have you on the phone, look how old I am. Because we have on our podcast here, we have to ask the question. You work at NASA. What are some of the upcoming NASA missions that are exciting you most? We know about the James Webb Telescope. Talk about that. Anything else that's kind of fun that you're at liberty to give out some knowledge on?
Sure, absolutely. So yeah, the James Webb Space Telescope, very exciting times for that. The launch is successful. Deploying the different things. If you've never seen a video of the James Webb Space Telescope and the technology behind it, highly recommend checking that out on YouTube. It's successfully launched. It's out near the Lagrange point, and we're just fine-tuning calibration right now. As a matter of fact, a couple of calibrating images just were published yesterday, and it's going to really dive into the science either in April or May as they start to collect data on very distant stars and galaxies to understand the early universe. On the human spaceflight side, Artemis 1 is being rolled out to the launch pad pretty much as we speak here. That'll be targeting May 22 launch date, doing a lot of stuff with human spaceflight, both with commercial partners in low Earth orbit, as well as preparing that deep space capability and building out the technology and processes needed to return humans to the moon in the near future. Last but not least, have to give my own center, NASA Langley Research Center in Hampton, Virginia, a shout out. We do a lot of aeronautics research down here. There are some really cool developments in the world of solar electric propulsion aircraft, quiet supersonic flight, urban air mobility. If you want to understand what we're going to be doing 25 or 30 years from now in terms of commercial aeronautics travel. Look no further than what NASA is doing in terms of research right now. We have a very close partnership with the Federal Aviation Administration, and there are a whole bunch of things in the pipeline that are going to really radically transform how we travel as individual customers in the U.S. and internationally.
That is awesome. You know, it's exciting. You know, as a child, for me, because I'm probably the oldest one. Well, I am the oldest one on this pod today. I remember the first landing on the moon as a kid. I know exactly where I was in Maine at the time. You know, it's exciting as we think about going back there. And as you talk about just these things and shouting out for your Langley activity, changing the way we move around with using different technologies, great research, you know, and hopefully at some point in time, it'll come to fruition for all of us to enjoy those years of research your team has put forward with it. So last question for you, how can listeners learn more about you?
Sure. Well, I'm afraid I'm pretty quiet on social media. You can certainly find me on LinkedIn, Benjamin Slade, work for NASA. So you can track me down through that. You can also contact me directly via email.
Brilliant. We appreciate that. Yeah, it is. It's an interesting world in social media too. So as you start looking along those lines, but we thank you today for all of your insights and your experience that you've had working at NASA and working with analytics and working with people in HR and actually helping to lead teams. And so we appreciate all that. Your answer to a high performing company was brilliant. And I think all of our listeners should enjoy that as well. But thank you for your time today, Bill, and I appreciate it and have a great one.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the People and Performance Podcast. Follow us on social media and remember to subscribe.